Iris Hobby, Reel 2. This first billet that you had with Mrs. Grummet, were you being fed there?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
We got up early in the morning, of course, and boiled our own kettle up for a cup of tea on the oil stove that used to take ages. And then when we came back for our breakfast, Mrs. Grummet had a daily job she went to, which she cooked us a breakfast that really wasn't really very much, and she'd got it over a saucepan over the oil stove, keeping it hot, you see, and it wasn't very nice at all. And then we came home at lunchtime, or dinner time, as we always referred to it then, and she cooked our dinner. And I was so hungry, you see. I was a growing girl, but anyway. And then we went back to the farm. And then when we came home after we'd finished, all we had was bread and butter and something and a piece of cake. And that's all we had. We really needed a meal then. And I really was very, very hungry. And now on a Sunday, after we finished milking, on the side, we didn't have to go back until the afternoon milking. So we had extra time, but Mrs. Grummet wouldn't allow us to stay in the house. And we used to have to take ourselves off somewhere after we'd had our lunch, until it was time for us to go to the afternoon milking. And we used to come in, of course, soaking wet, so there was no way to dry our clothes properly or anything. I mean, we were a nuisance to her, and I was very sorry about it, really. She didn't want us, but she was going to be turned out, you see, and this is the way it was. But we were at that billet, must have been for a year, when we were told by Gordon Peckard, who worked on the farm, that his sister would take us in.
You also said, Iris, when you first went there, you were going to have your weekly bath. At the farm?
Yes, I did, yes.
Did that happen?
Oh, yes. I used to walk, I have to walk across, where I used to go with the other girl. Once a week in the evening, used to walk across two fields to have a weekly bath. And the farmer's wife did used to give us a cup of tea. And then we used to have to walk back again. Yes, that happened every week. Because, you see, there was well water. And we used to have to get a bucket of water and just wash ourselves outside the our lodgings every night. Just to wash ourselves down in cold water.
Outside?
Yes, we went out in. Well, there wasn't a bathroom. And we used to do this.
What were the farming family like to you? You know, you've explained you used to get a cup of tea from the farmer's wife.
Well, they had got small children, and they didn't entertain us at all, not in any way, because the farmer's wife didn't really trust land girls, I don't think. her husband was quite a nice, tall, good-looking, youngish man, and she didn't want land girls there, actually. This is what we always used to think. And so we weren't entertained at all, not at the farmhouse though, not in any way. So didn't really get to know them very much at all, not really. And as I say, his father used to spy on us and him as well. And but we used to then went up to this other billet where we had a bathroom and everything, and were very well fed in actual fact compared to this other place. But we had this long walk, and I can remember my friend wasn't very well, and I had to walk through the early hours of the morning through this wood where soldiers were all lying drunk where they'd been all night, and I used to be terrified, you know. This was quite a regular occurrence. When two of us, it wasn't too bad, but on my own it wasn't very nice. And what finally decided us to leave that farm was the farmer himself, the old boy, was against land bills as well, you know, and he used to spy on us. And we were not allowed to take milk home, although we were, you know, the dairy workers. We were not allowed, the farm men used to have a can that they were allowed to take milk home. But we were not allowed to, because we were land girls. And our lady didn't really altogether believe this, because she thought this was very strange, you know. And so one day, this girl said to me, "Maud, I think this is dreadful. We've got these big smocks with big pockets." She said, "I'm going to help myself to some of that milk on the way up when we were going." This was when we were going home for breakfast, you see. And she helped herself to a couple of bottles of milk that he'd just come in with the horse and cart. The man that did the milk delivery, he was an old boy that wouldn't get called up. And as we had to walk past that old farmer's bungalow, and he said, "Caught you." He said, "I fortunately hadn't got any." But he said, "Caught you. I saw you take that milk." He said, "Right, instant sack for you." Yes, he did. And we got up to the where we were billeted, and she handed this milk out. And, oh, well, he took the milk away from her. Yes, she couldn't. But she told the landlady what had happened, and she said, "It's dreadful." And he said to me, "But you didn't take any, so you won't get the sack." I said, "You've sacked her, you've sacked me." And he said, no, "I've watched you, you work very hard. No, you've not got the sack, only her." So anyway, when we came back after our breakfast, we told the head cowman, and we told Gordon Peckett, and he said, "Right, that's it, I'm going in the army." He said, "I've been here since I was a boy, but that's it, I'm walking out as well." And one of the others said, "And yes, and so am I." And so he lost four people. But when he knew this, he said, "Oh no, he would reinstate her. Perhaps he'd been hasty." But we all said, "No, we're going." So I applied to the headquarters. I phoned them, went to the phone box and phoned them and said, "You know, I don't want to work on this farm anymore. Can you please transfer me?" And Maud went somewhere else. She didn't come with me. And I was put on a farm at Farnham.
Before you tell me about that, if I could just ask you a few questions,
yes.
You know, about this early period. Had you had any contact at this stage with the Women's Land Army? You know, had they given you any sort of advice or
None
training?
None whatsoever. I was supposed to have a representative who was supposed to keep in touch with me. I didn't hear from a representative. I didn't see one. I had gone on a couple of times myself. I'd heard that they wanted us to go to Guildford Cathedral for a march past. And I applied myself for that, and the farmer had allowed me to cycle all the way to Guildford after I'd finished milking. And I'd cycled all that way because I wanted to go on this march past Guildford Cathedral. And I remember throwing my bike down somewhere and getting on the parade, you know, and I remember people calling out, "They come parade again," you know, things like this. And no, I didn't see anybody, but that particular day when we went to Guildford Cathedral, I was right at the back of the church, and all I could see was lots of different sized bottoms in those corduroy breeches. Some were fat, some were thin, and I couldn't stop laughing. I was in the back of the pews, and I couldn't stop laughing. And I started everybody else, and they all laughed, you know, and all the way through. And the final straw in church was when they handed us out hymn sheets that said "Onward Christian Sisters." So we were just roaring with laughter all the time. And after them, we then had to go to a place which was Lady Denman arranged it. Incidentally, I'll come in now about Lady Denman. During the 1914 war, in 1917, it was discovered there was only enough food left in the country to last for 3 weeks. Because it was men's duty, no matter what their job was in the 90s, to go into the army, and they had nobody on the farm. So she was a very young person, and she formed the Women's Land Army in 1917. That was the beginning of it. And there again, in the last war, she worked so hard to get this Women's Land Army going again. It was only through her that the Winnersland Army got going. But after this church parade at Guildford Cathedral, she'd arranged for us to go to somebody to an open air tea party. And I remember that she said, "Now stand up, all the girls that are on dairy farms." And I stood up, you see, and she said, "You are the cream of the land." I mean, well, I couldn't stop laughing again, you see. And then this lady sang us a song about, "Oh, you pretty little butterflies." Well, that was it. I just couldn't stop laughing. So that was my afternoon at Guildford Cathedral. And then I went to a farm at Send, at Ettingendy in Surrey, which belonged to the, what's the big oil man's name? Oh, can't think. American, but he owned it.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to go there to proficiency tests, milking cows and things, and I cycled all the way to there as well and did this. And I got, because I'd received 100% proficiency marks, I was given a gold star badge, which I will show you in a minute. In actual fact, it was Bakelite, it wasn't gold at all in those days, you know, plastic was Bakelite. But apart from that, no, I didn't ever see anybody, not a representative. And when I went to Farnham, I still didn't see a representative.
While you were at this farm, you know, you were saying about the dangerous situation between three airports.
Yes.
Were there any, well, there must have been many raids and incendiaries.
Oh, yes, many. Mm. Yes.
Yes. Now, how did that affect your job and these cows?
Well, in actual fact, they didn't seem to, it didn't affect them very much, really. I mean, we used to have to sort of herd them into the sheds if it was that bad.
And how about you? Did it make your life more difficult?
Not really, I quite enjoyed it.
Or was it not frightening for you?
No. Well, no, I thought this is life. And also, of course, soldiers used to be out on exercises, and one morning a tank had overturned, a brain gun carrier, in actual fact. Two soldiers had been killed in one of the fields that we right by where we were working. But fortunately, we didn't see it. They cleared them away then, but there were all sorts of things going on. But I walked down to Caterham. There was a big roundabout at the Caterham bypass, which was, you know, and there was a big air raid while I was there. In actual fact, because you see, they were trying to bomb the barracks there, the Cajun barracks, and again the aerodrome. And there was a huge, and I just had to sort of dodge down, and all this flying everywhere. And it had gone on the barracks, actually.
And did you have any fire watching? Did you have to do any of that?
Well, yes, that's why I got this defence medal. You see, I was awarded later. But at that time, we weren't given medals, but recently we got medals because I used to have to go out at night. Because they used to drop in sentry bombs to catch, to set fire to the hay and the straw. And we used to have to go out with stirrup pumps, you know, with a hose into a bucket, or, you know, and that, doing all sorts of things just to make sure that, you know, these fires didn't get a hold.
Mm-hmm.
So recently, I've been told I could claim the defence medal. I just got it just to, you know, for my sons, really, and the National Service Medal, because we didn't get any medals whatsoever when we came out, and we were told that we'd got to send all our uniform back. Now, I'd been in the Land Army 2 years before I even got an overcoat, and I had my own breeches made, which was at a very cheap price, because I couldn't stand those itchy corduroy breeches with long itchy socks, so I used to wear jumpers. And then, you wore your dungarees out, you wore everything out. And then they said, "You've got to send it all back." Now I ask you.
Interesting, you know, you saying that, and I shall ask you perhaps more about that angle later on.
Yes,
but
yes.
This first farm you were at,
yes.
You know, saying you had to do this fire watching as well,
yes.
I suppose at certain times of year you must have worked very long hours.
Very, very long hours.
Mm.
Oh, yes.
What would it have been in the summer, say, when you were harvesting?
5 a.m. until we didn't ever stop till 6 p.m, and there was the half an hour, and we'll say an hour for lunch, an hour and a half's break. So if you work out 5 a.m. to 5 a.m, that's 12 hours, 13 hours is 6 o'clock, and an hour and a half of that, isn't it? That's 11 and a half hours a day, wasn't it?
Yeah. How did you bear up with that?
I was very, very tired, actually. And, I mean, even if I'd had more money, I couldn't have spent it because I was too tired to go anywhere. But I used to cycle. I lived at Cheam, and I used to, when it was light of evenings, if I wasn't going to be working in the evenings, I used to cycle to Cheam, but it was all the way from there, because I used to be so hungry. And my father used to say, "You're hungry, aren't you?" I'd say, "No, no." And my mother would be stocking me up with all sorts of stuff to cycle backwards, you know. And he said, "You don't like it." You know, I said, "I do, I love it." You know. And so I used to collect all this food. And my mother bought me two shirts. She bought me a tie. We didn't even get a Land Army tie then. We did afterwards, a special one, but we didn't then. And I don't know what I've done without my parents, really, stocking me up with all this food. And back I used to cycle again, all that way.
How about your leg, Iris?
Well, in actual fact, it held up very well. Because I'd taken part, as I say, I'd done lots of cycling and I'd done all these games that I used to do. I didn't really have to bend it right up, not really. Occasionally, I used to get twinges in it, yes. But nobody knew about my knee there. I didn't tell anybody about it. But had it given me trouble, I would have had to have come out. But we were walking and everything, but I've done a lot of things anyway.
So the work you were doing there was mainly the dairy with the cows?
Yes, I used to start by, first of all, you had to muck up the cow sheds. In the winter, in those days, the cows were lying in. You see, they didn't, now they just turn them out regardless of them. And you used to have to, before you could start milking, you had to muck all that out. And the straw, and that was very, very heavy. But there again, I used to show off, you see. Until I got the hang of it, I turned over one or two wheelbarrows, because you used to have to go up a plank and push it, and then tip it over onto the dung heap. But, you know, you get used to it. And then you used to have to hose all that shed down before you started milking, and you also had to wash all the cows down, because they would be pretty filthy. You had to wash all around the back ends of them and halfway around, and their udders had to be all washed before you could start milking. I don't think they do it now, looking when I go into places and see they're not nearly so clean as they used to be in those days. There used to be inspectors used to come round in those days. You wore a little white hat, you wore a white apron before you could start milking. And as I say, the cows used to have to be cleaned, so did you, and so did the chef. Some you put the milking machines on, some you hand milk, but you stripped them all out afterwards, every cow, if they'd been machine milked. Well then, before you did that, of course, as well, you fed them. They used to have chopped up mangoes or some cow cake, special cow cake to make them. To make them give extra milk, those that were giving a lot of milk, you gave extra cow cake to. They used to get cotton cake, which is made out of flax. And so anyway, we used to do this, and then we used to milk them. And then after the milking, if it was the summer, they were turned out into the fields. But if it was the winter, they then had to be all rebedded again with nice clean straw. And so that each cow, they were tethered at the neck, but each cow had all nice clean straw to every cow in the cow shed. And if the cows were, we would say in service, but it's bulling in actual fact, they were turned out into the yard with the bull. Which I found most embarrassing when I really was. I would be washing up the milking machines then when this went on, and I could see up the dairy, and they used to, the people that worked there used to hold my head up so that I got to look. That made me look. But I still got used to it. Didn't take any notice after a while. And then, as I say, if it was the winter, they all were then re-bedded again. Then you went home after breakfast, you came back, and then you had to chop up all the different foods that they had. Kale was one of the things. You used to have to put a horse in a cart and go out and cut down the kale, its tall stuff. And when it had been raining, all the water went all up your down your sleeve and all wet, and you were absolutely soaking wet. And you then brought that back to the sheds, and you had to chop all that up in the machine, because that was all part of their food. There was mangoes, there were all sorts of things that they were fed on. And then you did that right up until lunchtime, when you went home and had your lunch and your dinner, and then you came back, and you then have got to do all this again. You've got to clean them out again before starting your afternoon milking. You've got to feed them, you've got to clean them out again, you know, push all this heavy stuff, and then milk them. And then after milking again, you see, they had to be bedded down again with all fresh litter for the night. But in the summer, of course, they used to be turned out, and they would be out all night, so that when you started work early in the morning, you had you go and get them all in and call them all in. And I mean, it was dark, very dark, of course. And of course, we went on 2 hours in those days. We had double summertime during the war, and it didn't really affect the cows. They got used to it, the same as you had to get used to it. I mean, now I think if they left the crop alone in October, nobody would be any different. Nobody would know any different, but considering we were on 2 hours, and you just had to, you know, change your everything, and but it all worked out. And so
this bull, you were talking about the bulling, you know, and your embarrassment, but they're quite big and dangerous things, aren't they? Were you afraid of any of the animals?
Well, we had to be very, very careful. They have a ring through their nose by law, and there were two bulls on that farm, and bulls are never put together because they fight to the death if they can. And the smaller bull, I mean, the other one would have sort of killed him, so we used to, but occasionally the small bull would get in with the cows where he saw the bull was there sometimes, where he was perhaps being taken to a cow in the fields, and this bull would get in, and we used to have to separate them, and it was quite frightening, actually. It was quite frightening. We used to have forks, you know, and generally they don't have two bulls on a farm, but it was a big farm. There were a lot of cows, so they had to have two. But he was the big one. I mean, he would have just got the other one. But it was quite frightening, actually, when the younger one got in with the older one, because they used to start fighting and goring. You see, they say that bulls don't like red, but in actual fact, it's blood they don't like. You see, blood is red. So that if one is bleeding, that is when they go berserk. It's not the colour, it's the colour of blood. And of course, in those days, cows all had horns. Now I'm very glad to say that they dehorn them, because cows are very spiteful to each other. And where you've got a mixed herd, the older one is always the boss of the herd. She has to go first. And she will set on the younger, the other ones, and would rip them right up their udder. Cows all do this. Cows are very spiteful animals, actually. They're not the lovely animals you see in the fields at all, not to each other, they're not. And quite often, you would find you brought the cows in, and one would be gored all up its udder, and you wouldn't notice it always, and when you'd go to wash them, and you'd get kicked, because cows can really kick out. They don't kick straight out like a horse, they come up and then go out. So if you're sitting milking, they can have you off the stool, you see. And I saw quite a lot of cows gored by another cow. And so now I'm glad to say that they dehorn them, and people that don't know what they're talking about say, oh, it's cruel and they shouldn't do it, but they should do, in actual fact. You don't see this now with cows, you know, they can't now because they're all dehomed. There are certain breeds of cows that are that don't have horns anyway. But the majority of them do, and the different breeds of cows, they are quite cool, actually. Mm.
When you look back at your, and this was a year, wasn't it,
yes,
your first farm?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Were there good moments, you know, moments when you look back that you relish?
They were quite nice because some of them, when we went up to the next village where we were billeted, that was up a Warlingham, whereas with the farmers at Waldingham, this was up a Warlingham. And there was a pub up there. I think it was called The Anchor. And we used to go in there sometimes. And in the winter after we'd finished work, and perhaps had a game of darts. And there was a darts team. And Irish Guards used to go in there. And they just used to do nothing but drink. And there used to be fights regularly between the Irish Guards and the Canadians on a Friday night when they used to be caught, used to be paid. And sometimes we were short of people in our darts team, so we used to let the Irish, be. But they used to be so drunk by the time they were finished that they would start smashing up the pub. So I do remember all these things. But I remember we were taken to at an ATS, a soldiers' camp, where ATS were going to play us, the soldiers were going to play us at darts. And we did go one evening to this, and I was actually, I have nothing to be snobbish about, but I must admit, I did rather look down at the ATS girls, because perhaps the ones we met there weren't awfully nice girls, actually. They weren't, they really weren't nice. They were sitting on the side of sergeant's laps and doing all sorts of things they shouldn't have been doing, you know. And I wasn't given a very good impression of the ATS girls, but it may have been just then. It's very unfair to say, you know, to be genuine about this. As I say, I've got a friend who is a chief petty officer for the Reds, and she used to say exactly the same things. Didn't know any girls in the WAFs, so I don't know. But apart from that, there were some quite happy times because there were some nice people working on the farm. And but gradually they went into the forces. And that's when we decided we wanted to go to another farm because of this awful farmer.
And also, did you have any prisoners of war at that stage?
Yes.
On that particular farm?
They weren't on that farm. It was at the next farm we were prisoners of war.
Oh, you'll tell me about it
then.
I'm sure you're ready to go on to, is it Farnham?
Farnham, yes.
That's Farnham in Surrey, is it?
Yes, it is. Finally, it was called Middle Oak Farm, and that was miles away from anywhere. But the land girl, so there was another land girl who was already there at that farm. And she drove the tractor, the job, of course, which I really liked. And I was at the dairy farm with the head cowman, and he lived in a tied house with his wife and small boy. And the land girls were in the cottage next door, but we used to go into his house for our meals. And we had a bathroom, and we had quite good food there. In fact, it was quite a good billet. And I'm just trying to think, had I gone up? When I was 18, my money went up to 25 shillings a week, but I had to pay more for my billet. So I still weren't no better off. Anyway, we worked on the farm. I used to go with the head cowman. And we had a farm bailiff there, who was like the farm manager. And it really was a gentleman's farm at his estate, but he was in the Air Force, his son was in the Air Force. And it was a big estate, you see, and we worked very hard in actual fact. But the cows were very well looked after, better than some of the people in the farm workers' cottages, actually.
Were conditions bad then? You know, because you probably had a very unique view of farm life.
Yes.
Were the conditions generally very bad for farming people?
On farm, very, very bad. because the farm workers, you know, as I've mentioned, they were in tied cottages generally, and they could be turned out overnight. They could do something wrong, and the farmer could just say, right, you're out, because there was always somebody else that needed their job.